Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today we're talking with Damien Hall and Hannah Rickman about the Spine Race. The maddest race going, I reckon.
Just watching it unfold via social media and the likes was just ridiculous after a while. Like, I was just... On paper, it is an extremely challenging event, and then it just kind of, like, unfolds in this sort of wintry sort of mayhem. Yeah. And you're suddenly just like, oh, wow, this is next level. But, yeah, it was great to talk to them both and sort of get a... Actually, really nice to have sort of Hannah first time and sort of not sponsored in the mix, kind of just performing, yeah. And then Damien returning to sort of like unfinished business from last year and to win it and all this sort of stuff. So two very differing opinions on some stuff and also two very similar experiences, so it was nice.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, everything's against you on the Spine, isn't it? The weather's against you. You can't, there aren't, you know, you can kind of sleep where you want. Damien talks about that, this sort of like napping on the trail.
Yeah,
kind of thing. Yeah, it's and obviously it's what, 268 miles, so it's a massively long way. And the pictures of people, like, picture people at the end. I think the Spine ages people like a sort of rucksack ages a banana. Do you know what I mean? You're like, it doesn't look like you've just competed about. It's like you've been to war. You've basically been to war for a week.
Yeah, it does. You're coming out looking a bit worse for wear at the end of it. But they both looked great when we spoke to them. So it's obviously only a short term.
They've recovered, haven't they? They have recovered. Yeah, it's so different, mate. It's so different to like a 24-hour race where like you can at least tell yourself, look, this is over in a day. You know, like bring your best self to something for a day. Like, how hard is that to get your head around? Whereas it's like, this could be 6 or 7 days out here. Like, I just think it takes such a mental fortitude to actually get through it.
It's the great unknown. The sort of, and Hannah was saying this, you can prepare with the miles and you can do all the bits and pieces that you do, but then how your brain's going to behave when it's sleep deprived and what you're going to think and see and do. There's no sense of, it seems like quite a large sense of like everything being slightly out of control. And I think that's probably where you get the people who, like, that's when it becomes, that's the crunch point. Basically, people can cope with that and be like, well, this is all a bit sideways and a bit strange, but it's fine. I know what I'm doing. Whereas, you know, the breakdown comes quite quickly when you're in the midst of that and your brain's telling you to just go over there and hug that tree for 20 minutes because, you know, you need to be closer to nature or something, you know, like really like trippy kind of whatever it is, you know. So
can you imagine how good you feel though? Can you imagine like if you made it, like what couldn't you do after doing the Spine? Like, you could, like, you know, when you, like, life got hard, you could look back and go like, I can probably handle this though because I did the Spine.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if that's your benchmark, I think probably just reassess the small stuff first. if everything's getting on top of you so much, you have to go and spend 7 days somewhere to just reframe life.
Go and toughen up and do the Spine.
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely it's sort of one of those ones that's slightly even beyond a bucket list. It's not on my. I have no.
Yeah, it's not glamorous enough, is it? It's so unglamorous.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's. I don't know. You sort of think that, I guess it's because you can, there's just a very obvious sense of whether or not you'd be able to do it. Whereas I think most people, when we had Gavin on and he was talking about planning adventures, and you always have to have a slightly ambitious target, but it's obviously not ambition beyond measure. Whereas the Spine Race, I think, is that, like, it's just like,
yeah, you've got to back yourself, haven't you, to have a chance of doing it for sure. But it's a real challenge in the same way that, like, you know, the finishing rates at most races are probably in the 90s, aren't they? Which isn't, that's, I'm not like casting shade on those races, but in some ways, like, you're very, very likely to finish most running races that you take part.
Do you mean like ultras?
Ultras might be a little bit lower, but yeah, like, but yeah, even ultras, say like the ultra that the Centurion Ultra I did, is probably like a 70% finishing rate, which is like quite kind of low in some ways, but also most chances are you're going to finish the race. Yeah. But I think you get on the start line in the spine, chances are you're probably not going to finish a race, I would say. Certainly something like the Barclays, like, you've got a very slim chance of finishing the race.
I think that the Barclays is always designed to be unfinishable. That's my sort of like, that's the sort of,
yes,
that's my hot take. And if, you know, those who get close or do, then that's like an absolute anomaly. Whereas obviously the spine is designed to be finished. It's just a combination of many different things aligning up and going well. And is, yeah. I think that what's, it's like 30%. Is it something like that?
I don't know what the finish. It might even be higher than that, Ben. But okay. Yeah, it's not. Yeah, but it, I mean, the reason it's not super low is because you have to demonstrate quite a lot of experience to get a place.
Yeah.
So like you and I couldn't rock up and be like, hey, done a 50 miler, like,
guys, I don't know,
see you at the spine.
I've done a podcast for a bit now, so let us do this race. Yeah.
They vet it. I think for safety reasons, more than anything, it's like,
yeah,
they can't have any old clown on the Pennine Way in January.
Very smart. Very smart of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, great to talk to them. So let's just get them on.
Let's do it. Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete. Could be a physio. Or a complete unknown. The Spine Race is a 268 non-stop ultramarathon taken in the entirety of the Pennine Way. The winter edition takes place in January, meaning competitors must battle snow, wind and sub-zero temperatures as they make their way from Edale, Derbyshire to Kirkyaldholm in Scotland. It's become known as Britain's most brutal race. Our guests this week are male winner Damien Hall and second place female Hannah Rickman. So welcome, Damien and Hannah, to the Runner's World podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Let's start with you, Hannah, because Damien, he's a superstar, isn't he? Everyone knows Damien. He's got books out. He's been on this podcast multiple times.
It's our fault.
We keep inviting him back. But your running achievements are probably have flown a little bit under the radar, I'd say, to date. So could you tell us about your running history, like who you are and kind of, some of the things you did before the spine?
Yeah, so I guess I got into ultra running maybe 3 or 4 years ago now, and I've just kind of done the usual thing where you run a 50k and that's quite fun, and so you try a 50 miler and that was still good, and kind of escalated up through the distances. And yeah, unfortunately it's sort of a slippery slope that seems to have ended up with the spine race.
Hell of a slope.
I know. So I did the spine challenge in North last winter and had an amazing time doing that, and then yeah, decided I want to come back and try the whole thing this winter.
Were you always running and then the distances just increased, or did you just discover running and suddenly it went from, actually, I like running very far, very quickly, sort of like, as in you started running quite far, quite quickly?
I guess I didn't run at school, or I'd done a lot of team sports through school and university. So I'd always done running kind of as fitness and something I enjoyed doing, but it was never like the focus, never the main event. And yeah, I think my enjoyment for running increased a lot when I realized that it was okay to go slower and further, and that you could, instead of having to, you know, be nailing a 5K every single time, you could be going out and spending all day outside, or having, you know, long, slow runs with friends and snacks. And that was definitely, yeah, kind of more my cup of tea.
Amazing. Right, Damien, one for you then. What is it about the spine? You've done so many races, but what is it about the spine that makes it such an epic race? And why do you, someone like yourself, kind of keep coming back to it?
Yeah, I think it's a few things. Firstly, it's kind of the madness of it, you know, the insanity of the idea. And I do still remember first spotting it in a magazine before it had actually happened. There was almost like a little news story in a running magazine. It may have been Runner's World, just sort of saying there's going to be this crazy race on the Pennine Way in winter. And I'd just recently, I was new to running, but I'd recently hiked it, and it'd taken me about 16 days and it was exhausting. I think I'd like, my knee had buckled under me, like, and this was in the summer. And I just remember thinking, that's insane, that can't work. And so I followed it avidly for a couple of years, and a few people were getting to the end, not even half of them, but you know, a few were. So it's the kind of insanity of the concept, you know, what sort of crazy idea. And then when you go and do it, I guess there's that huge sense of achievement when you get it done, which is just sort of almost life-changing. It's mind-blowing. It's wonderful. But also there's this incredible sense of community around the race, which is partly in the volunteers and the staff, who are just super helpful and encouraging and lovely. Also the other runners as well. I mean, you make great friends. You make friends for life. I mean, I've been to two weddings of people I've met at the Spine. And actually the guide father of my son is someone I met at the Spine. But also even kind of strangers turn up in the middle of nowhere with I don't know, cups of tea or a bit of Haribo or just ring a cowbell. And it can be the darkest, most miserable weather and the most miserable place. And that people are just there to sort of cheer you on. And it's just, it's hard to explain, but it's wonderful.
I think that the community bit of it is very interesting, especially I'm sure you were utterly unawares because you were busy, but the dot watching Twitter side of life was really kicking off, especially towards the end, and the sort of also on the imagery on Instagram and the sort of like frozen faces that were arriving at different checkpoints and stuff like that. I mean, a lot of people were following the race that way and really engaging with it and sort of seeing how everyone was doing and all that sort of stuff. I mean, firstly, how aware are you that that's happening? And do you just sort of switch your phone on at the end and you're just like, oh my God, this is too many notifications.
Maybe you first, Hannah, because this was your first one.
Yeah, I was phone off pretty much the whole way around. But I was definitely, I knew I had lots of friends following. I've, you know, dot watched the race before. I know what a cool experience it is to be kind of watching people moving and how kind of compelling that can be and what a cool experience it is to be on that side. So I was definitely aware that people were going to be watching me, that had lots of support coming from different places. But then I had a nice bit at the end where I turned my phone on and had, you know, 800 notifications from all my buddies, which is an amazing moment.
Yeah, it's really cool. And especially when the classic get to the end and turn your phone on and everything's pinging away. It is a pretty cool moment. And when social media and these sort of bits of technology that can, you know, be a bit, have negative impacts on our lives. That is one of those moments where it's really cool, actually. I must confess I've forgotten the word. I'm still tired. but I've worked, so I've done the race four times, although only got to the finish three times. But 2 years I've actually worked on the race in the media team. And I've got to tell you, it's so exciting, because the idea of getting the that picture of the current leader, you know, yeah, caked in snow or just having a, you know, wild eyes or, you know, trying to get to them and get that picture and then somehow get back to civilization and post the picture. That was really exciting, actually. And I loved doing that for, I think, 2017 and 2018, I think I did. Although it was often by the time it would be so complicated to sort of reach them and then get back to somewhere with Wi-Fi that often by the time you posted it, they were out of the race or something else had happened far more dramatic that it didn't matter anymore. But yeah, they do, you know, they invest in the media side and that they have these daily videos and they have quite a big team of, you know, really professional people who work hard and are talented. And it is, I suppose it's good and bad, isn't it? With sort of worried relatives watching at home, they can almost see too much.
Yeah, that's true. When you and Jack were sort of trading places at the end and the sort of like you'd had a sleep and he hadn't and everyone was speculating and then there was the time penalty and there was all this sort of chat around whether or not the tracker was updating with the time penalty or if they met it was actually hilarious but brilliant, like at the same time there was just so much sort of wild speculation and then, you know, just and because there's that disconnect, you're watching a dot and you're seeing things drip feed in whenever you can, and that's what I kind of like the most about it. It's not actually constant. There's kind of like an untold behind the whole thing.
Well, there's a fascinating debate to be had, isn't there? I don't know if you follow, say, UTMB's coverage, but they really, you know, they have people on drone cameras, they have people on bikes
yeah.
following it. So you really, you don't see everything, but you see far more than you do in another sort of trail ultra marathon. And there's an argument to almost say, you know, has it gone too far that you see too much? And some, maybe something like the spine, or I'll certainly say the Barclay marathons, where that, you know, there's almost no information coming out. And that, it fills your head full of ideas, doesn't it? And the funny thing was, like, maybe you want to get onto this in a bit, I don't know, but the final section with me and Jack running in the Chevy, it's sort of dueling for first place. We were racing each other for an hour or two, but then after a while we just ran together quite casually, quite chatty, for maybe like 8 hours or something. But it, on the tracker, I'm pretty certain it would have looked like we were dueling neck and neck and neck and chasing, and we were just kind of chilling, if I'm honest.
Can we talk about like the training for this? I'm really interested in you, Hannah, in this way, because you live in Malawi, right? Like close to the equator. Probably couldn't get any further away from like the conditions you're going to experience on the Pennine Way in January, and yet you've done so well. So can you, I mean, tell us a little bit, like, what's it like running in Malawi, and how on earth did you try to sort of replicate what you were going to be running in the UK?
Yeah, it's a bit different. So it's definitely like bits you can't replicate. There's no bog, there's no snow. There are a lot of hills, and there's a lot of fun mountains. So it's actually, I mean, it's a really beautiful country and lots of great places to explore. And I've got a nice group of friends there. So we did a lot of long weekends out kind of hiking and running in the mountains. And, you know, I guess there's less organized races and events, but there's more opportunities to, you know, find an adventure and choose a route that you want to try and do, or a place that you want to explore. So I've sort of parked the bog and the snow and just got down to doing lots of running. And then I came back to the UK for Christmas and managed to, I dragged my mum and my sister on a recce of a bit of the course and managed to convince them that we'd have a nice like family bonding experience. And we had horizontal rain over Fountains Fell and kind of biblically horrible stuff. And they ditched me and went to the pub while I did Penn again. But it was a nice opportunity to get a bit of time on the course in as well.
Yeah, that's great. I guess you probably need to do a little bit of time in the bog, don't you? Otherwise it's going to be like, it's going to be too much of a shocker, I think, from like, I mean, because presumably temperature in Malawi is very warm, right?
Yeah, it was 35 degrees when I left the country, and it was -5 when I landed in Heathrow. So that was a bit of a shocker.
Wow. That's acclimatization in an instant, isn't it?
That there was pretty dramatic, yeah.
Damien, when you're returning to something like this, and you've obviously prepped for it before, how did you come around? Was it any different this time? Or did you just stick to like what you knew would work in terms of energy needed and endurance and stuff, or did you mix it up quite a lot this time?
Mostly I was doing what I'd done. So the previous year I was doing very well in the race, but I had a groin injury. I was winning the race just after halfway, and got a groin injury. So the main thing was I didn't want that to happen again. So I was doing sort of extra strength work around those delicate key areas. I'd say extra strength work in general, in that, they make you carry a lot of kit. And even the lightest packs are going to be sort of probably 5 kilograms, which is, you know, fine for a few hours, but we're running for days. It's quite a lot. So it's not unheard of. Yeah, we've seen some very good runners sort of cross the finish line with sort of muscular back problems, you know, from partly from the kit. There was a lot of concentrating on sort of trunk and even some upper body strength and groin strength, I suppose. Other than that, yes, it was
famously strong groins.
Yes, I need my strong groin because it was, my groin was inadequate before, not for the first time in my life either. Other than that, I actually think a lot of spine sort of people training for the spine get it a little bit wrong, in that they do lots of long runs with the big heavy pack on. Now there is some value to that, but if you do that lots and lots, you'll just sort of become good at being a slow runner. I had several clients in the race as well, and really I'd encourage people to, you know, get as fit as possible, get as fast as possible before you sort of stick the pack on and slow yourself down. And actually I didn't do that many runs with a pack on, and certainly not that many at all with sort of full weight pack. Obviously you need to do it sometimes, to otherwise it's a bit of a shock, but yeah, I think people can overdo that aspect of it.
I'm quite surprised to hear that.
Well, I think you can almost do too much specific work, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
and in a way, Hannah's sort of proved it, that she, you know, didn't actually run on the course all that much, ran on quite different terrain and was still very, very good. Actually, Hannah, how much running with a pack did you do before the race?
Not a ton. Lots of running and then building in the pack a bit towards the end. Lots of hiking with the pack and lots of time just sort of in the hills carrying stuff around. A reasonable amount. I had a few days kind of going around the city I live in Malawi in 35 degree heat, carrying a down sleeping bag and a spork and a pink shovel and all of that with me. But it felt a bit ridiculous. I felt I couldn't do it too much.
Can we talk about the role that sleep plays? Because it seems to be a huge thing when it comes to spine, or lack of sleep is probably more the accurate term. How did you two manage that? Damien, I heard you slept possibly less than 3 hours. Is that similar for you, Hannah, as well? You really have to minimise what you can sleep.
I had a horrible time with sleep, and I don't understand how these guys do it on so little. I was really, struggling. So I think I probably got maybe 6 or 7 hours of proper sleep and then naps here and there, and I was a mess. I had several really sloppy nights of hallucinating, of wandering around in circles, of feeling pretty rubbish. So yeah, I found the sleep side of things really hard. I felt like that was the thing that was slowing me down the most, was not getting that right and feeling like I still had more in my legs but I was heading in the wrong direction.
How do you even, like, go for a hike through the night beforehand? Is this sort of something that you build into the whole thing, or is it just, you know, that that's just going to be just whatever it turns out to be?
And I think the other thing I hadn't quite anticipated is also, because so last year on the Challenger North I'd had, you know, a couple of nights out, a few hallucinations, but I think I'd forgotten just how rubbish it is being sleep deprived. I just felt, you know, just how sort of like being drunk but without any of the fun stuff, you know, you're just sort of really useless and depleted and everything felt hard. I'd love to hear from Damien about how he handles it, because it really felt like something that was a big struggle for me.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Well, yeah, definitely. I would say most of us can, especially if we have once before, most of us can run through one night without too many issues. But it's the second night that is nearly always the problems start. I found number one thing is make sure you're eating enough. It sounds really obvious, but like when you get to that stage, when you've been running for 30, 40 hours, nearly always you're not eating enough. So as soon as you start to feel tired or sleepy, at least eat something, drink something, in case that's simply become a bit depleted, you know, at least do that. And quite often that you're okay for another hour or two then. I would say then, you know, caffeine, that affects people differently, but it can be quite useful. But you've got to be quite careful with sort of, you know, it's like a sugar spike, isn't it? You sort of get a caffeine spike, and of course you're going to tumble off the back of it a little bit later. So you've got to try and get it going in consistently. But yeah, once you get to maybe night three or four, power naps are really effective if the conditions are okay. I didn't do one on the trail this year, but lying down for 10, 15, 20 minutes, you know, if you're not too cold, if it's not raining, I've done other races and stuff where that's really, you know, perks you up for several hours, actually. It's pretty amazing.
So that's just on the trail, Damien. You're just kind of like lying down in the snow, get a sleeping bag on, 5 minutes.
Don't even do the sleeping bag.
Wow.
Just set an alarm on your watch. But that's the thing. You do have to find a little spot maybe that's a bit sheltered, or if you lie on snow, yeah, you might get a bit wet and stuff, so you might wake up sooner. But if you can find a little spot, whatever the shelter is, in previous races I've done that, and that can be useful, you know, to an extent. But yeah, some nights you're going to have a proper lie down. And I didn't get it perfectly. I could have maybe done things better. On the third night I did have a full sort of 2 hours or so. And I was much, who knew? I was much quicker after that and much better. But it's so hard when you're doing well in the race to sort of think, you know, I'm giving up. Can I give up 2 hours? You know, almost donate it to my opponents to have some sleep, which of course makes rational sense to people watching or something. But when you're in that situation, like, I've got 2 hours lead on that guy. Do I give up 2 hours to sleep and then I'm level? And then what if, you know, so it's hard to do it. And it's something I could probably improve on. But I would say, yeah, eat, drink, caffeine, try the power nap. And then sometimes, yeah, a longer nap.
You're talking about being rational. At what point do you actually notice that you're being utterly irrational? Because it's got to be like sleep deprivation and everything that coincides. You could be there going, well, the logical thing to do is this. But also, I have no idea what that means anymore.
It does get a bit like that. I mean, I had a really good sign this year that happened to me, which was, there was a simultaneous race called the North Challenger, I think it's called, the Challenger North, which covers the top half of the route. And there were some runners, we were toing and froing a bit with some runners doing that. And I was basically running in these woods, and I thought I was running pretty well. I thought, oh, considering what stage we're at and how tired I am, I'm running pretty well here. And this guy just hiked past me. and he was someone I knew a little bit. So he kind of said, dude, like, if I'm hiking past you, maybe you need a rest or something along those lines, you know? And I was like, yeah, you're right. Because I thought I was running well. I was like, yeah, chariots of fire. But no, I was, you know, running 18 minute miles or something. So that was helpful. I mean, that was helpful. And I suppose if you're starting to get lost, if you're making bad decisions, but it's hard. And it's part of hallucinations are another good sign, or bad sign. It's all part of the drama and the excitement of trying to suss that stuff out, you know?
Well, I love the hallucination part. And I think, Hannah, this isn't an exact quote, but you said when you touched the wall at the famous hostel at the end, and you said, I'm really glad that you guys are actually real, because I've seen so many people today that aren't real. Can we talk a little bit about the nature of those hallucinations, what they were like for you, how believable they were, and how you dealt with them?
So I guess when I've had them before, they're not believable in that you know that they're not real, but they're very convincing. So last year on the Challenger North, I had a whole load of little tigers driving miniature cars and wearing sunglasses that were driving around my ankles. And I stopped and had a really good look at them and properly like stared and focused. I was like, I know they're not real, but they're right. They're definitely there. So I've had some pretty kind of convincing ones before. This year was all beds, so I was hallucinating beds in my peripheral vision, like nice relaxing four-poster beds with pillows and sort of fluffy duvets. They were all definitely there, welcoming houses with their lights on and a log fire, and lots of people and faces. Yeah,
wow,
it was pretty trippy.
Does it freak you out, because it's like middle of the night in the dark somewhere suddenly, and you're suddenly a face will pop up, you know, and you're completely on your own?
Mostly quite friendly, you know.
Oh, right.
As you say, if you are on your own, it's sometimes quite nice to have a tiger or two.
A friend.
A little bit of company along the way, yeah.
Someone was saying that he was like, oh, I thought I was chatting to Owen Keith, and it just turned out it was a hedge. So yeah, it's an amazing sort of subplot of these races, I think, is how you manage to deal with that element and what kind of form it takes. Because some of them could be quite macabre, I think, some of these hallucinations. Like, we've heard about people seeing skulls in, like, the water and stuff. I feel like I might be sort of quite freaked out by some of that if that happened. But anyway, there you go.
Can we talk kit? I know that there's always a great deliberation about what people are wearing and what they're doing. And obviously there's stipulated things that you have to take with you. And you, obviously, Damien, you're an Innovate athlete. Hannah, are you sponsored by?
Definitely no. Not.
So this is a sort of great, I guess, a great talking point in the fact that, Damien, you sort of work directly with Innovate to sort of produce and have the bits that you need. And Hannah, you're just there going by what you can get your hands on. So how do you sort of work out what you need and what you don't need?
I guess a lot of it's trial and error. Like, a lot of it is stuff that I've used a lot in the past from camping, from long sort of hiking trips. And a couple of things that work or didn't work that I've then tried to get lighter versions of or smaller versions of. I think for me, just also being really organized with it also, knowing what I've got, where it is in my bag, what stuff I need to use when. And I guess like being really familiar with the kit that I've got and how to use it when I need it, especially if I'm using it when my brain's in a state and I need to just be able to get my hands on the right stuff.
Are you sort of like messaging like, oh, I'm going to go and do it, and everyone's like, you need to have some ridiculous Gore-Tex something, and you'll just be like, right, I've got to get my hands on some sort of like excellent something from somewhere? Or do you just kind of know what you like and what works for you?
There's definitely there's an overwhelming amount of information out there. There's the Spine Facebook page has got a lot of people with a lot of very strong opinions about different kinds of Gore-Tex and who really will like defend their point to the death. I think a lot of it is really individual, and it is about kind of finding what works for you. And some stuff has been stuff that I've borrowed off friends that I've liked, I've tried that it hasn't worked. Just coming up with something that works for me. And most of it did the job pretty well, I'd say. It was pretty warm and dry most of the time.
How many pairs of socks did you take?
Probably six or seven in the bag, and then some waterproof socks as well, a couple of pairs of waterproof socks.
Socks would be what I would, that would be the thing for me. I just think if I was going to do one thing that would make myself a little bit happy,
new pair of socks.
Yeah, a couple of like clean socks every time.
24 hours
a good
of miserable feet, I would just be like, dry socks would be the one.
Yeah, that's a good moment in time.
What about you, Damien?
Yeah, I just really echo what Hannah said there about that sort of individual element. So many people go, well, I did the spine and I wore this and this and this, so you need these things too. And often that's not the case at all, because, I don't know, we're all physically different. We move at different paces. We have different things. For example, I mean, my hands get really cold really quickly. Other people are fine with their gloves on and I'm there with three pairs on, you know. So I know that about myself, which is really useful. But also I run quite hot. Like, my upper body creates quite a lot of heat. I often, on the spine, can just have like a long sleeve base layer, but like a summer base layer sort of thing, and my full jacket. And that's enough a lot of the time in the day, if I'm moving well, until the hallucination stage. But for some other people, that won't be warm enough, you know. So I mean, I do, yeah, as I say, I do have some clients and I coach them for it, and I have to be a bit careful not to be too sort of prescriptive and say you should have this or this. But yeah, I would say the number one thing is try and find those shoes and those socks, that combination that's going to work for you, because if you get foot problems early on, you're in for a pretty miserable time. And the rest of it is, stuff that suits you. A pack is important, but probably not as critical. I would say, shoes and socks. And there's the whole dilemma of, do you go with waterproof socks? But sometimes waterproof socks cause some problems. It could be too warm for them and stuff like that. But foot comfort, if you can have relatively comfortable feet, and I was pretty lucky there, then you're in for a much better time.
In terms of obviously you two are at the front of this race, but lots of people are coming in just inside the cutoffs. It's in some ways an even more incredible experience because they've had to sort of battle the fear of being timed out and it's taken longer. Do you think that I'm just trying to work out how quick you have to be to actually do this. Do you think a sort of determined hiker could actually finish a spine within the time?
Yeah, I do know. I do know someone, Alan Rumbles, actually. What year was this? I think 2017 or 2018. He hiked the whole lot and got in. But he did deliberately practice in training. I don't know if he had an injury or not, but like he deliberately practiced fast hiking and training, and he did it. He hiked it all, didn't run a step. So it is achievable. And I try and remind people that beforehand. You know, if you look at the amount of time, and don't want to sleep very much, then it is achievable. It is achievable. So I think hopefully the spine, you know, it is more accessible than it may sound, because I know it sounds pretty bonkers to a lot of people, but If you're willing to sort of tough the weather out and ignore a few hallucinations, you don't need to be super fast by any means to do it.
Did you think, Hannah, because obviously Damien's done it like four times now, was there any part of you that wondered whether you could do it when you're at the start line? Could you not entertain that idea of it being like, this is going to be too hard?
I thought I could do it. I think I thought there's so many variables, like there's so many things that could have gone wrong. There's so many, you know, injuries or slips or problems that you can get that can put you in difficulty. But I mean, I felt like I'd trained as much as I possibly could have done for it. I felt like I had a handle-ish on maybe what it was going to look like. I think maybe I was naive and underestimated it. But I think I felt at the start like I had a chance of getting to the end and just needed to, yeah, get it done and see what happened, I guess.
You kind of have to, don't you?
Yeah,
otherwise,
yeah,
why? I think
you,
so.
Why are you stood at the start, I guess, is the kind of the thing.
I think
there.
It'd be easy to find reasons to stop if you, if you didn't think you were going to make it to the end, then you could easily find a way to stop early on.
Rich started this by saying that it's considered perhaps Britain's toughest race.
Is it? Yeah.
On a global scale, it's got to be up there in terms of, you know, difficulty. I mean, you mentioned the Barclay Marathons, and obviously that's a unique event in itself, but it's got to be, the winter spine has got to be one of the hardest ones out there. Opinions?
The Great British Barclay. I think that's what it is.
It's the hardest thing I've ever done by a mile.
what would be the other contenders then? What, the Dragon's Back? Is the Dragon's Back up there?
It's interesting. I did the Dragon's Back, and I did them in the same year. It's definitely a tough race, but because it's a multi-stage race where you stop and can sleep all night, you really can get that recovery and refuel well. When it's single stage, just continuously going, it is that sleep deprivation thing. You just don't really recover. You just keep going. But it was interesting that year, some people completed the spine and then couldn't complete the Dragon's Back, actually. But that's because in the Dragon's Back, you do have to move pretty quickly on some tough terrain. And it is more rocky, mountainous terrain, really, than the spine. So they're both incredibly tough. They are actually quite different. But yeah, in terms of Britain's toughest races, there's those two. You get some crazy ones. There's some 200-mile tunnel race, isn't there?
Oh, God, that was on the BBC. That's just insane, that one.
Yeah.
That's in Bath, isn't it? That's quite soon. Is that soon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are some sort of wacky ones. And then, of course, you're probably aware this new concept that's really gaining popularity is this sort of last man or last person standing concept,
right.
Where
yeah.
you just keep going until there's only one person left. I've signed you two up for one of those coming up.
Oh, great. Thanks so much. Is it the one in the tunnel? Is it the one? Can we do one in the tunnel?
Yeah.
Well, it's got to be up there, hasn't it? It's got to be in the top of three, the spine. Dragon's Back, the spine, and then maybe one of those backyard things. Throw that in there. Well, there's a race across Scotland. That sounds quite hard as well. That's about 200 and something miles, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I think what makes the spine hard is partly, well, the weather, although the weather this year was pretty kind overall, but... yeah, the sleep deprivation and the darkness. I mean, it's just dark most of the time. It's good fun.
It's good fun.
Yeah,
it's good fun.
Would you both go back?
Too soon. maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I need to have a think about it. I feel like you do it. I just feel like I learned so much from doing it once, and there's so many things that you do, and you think I'd do that differently next time. And I do love it. You know, I love the Pennine Way. I love the places. I love the people. I love the community. All the things Damien was talking about. It is just, it's something, it's pretty special. There's not a lot else like it. And yeah, there's nothing else going on in January anyway, is there? So yeah, maybe. We'll see.
Watch your space. But you, Damien, back for a fifth time?
Definitely. Yeah. I don't know if I'll definitely go back next January, but there's a reasonable chance. And if not, then probably the one after. I mean, there's just nothing else much to do at that time of year, is there?
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Dry January. That's about it.
Dry January, yeah.
Yeah.
Or veganuary or a few park runs or the spine.
Or the spine, I mean, that's it. Oh, well. We've all, everyone's
oh, sold it in there.
Everyone's
hasn't it?
Diaries has changed for the next year. That's it. We're all in.
Well, look, thank you both so much for your time coming on the Runners World podcast, talking about the spine. Ben and I are going to sign up for this tunnel race off the back of that. No? Okay. But yeah, thanks very much for your time. Congratulations both on doing so well in the race, and probably see you both back there in January.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. Huge thanks to our special guests, Hannah Rickman and Damien Hall, and to you, of course, for listening.
You can once again subscribe to 3 issues of Runner's World for just £5. Head to hearstmagazines.co.uk/runnersworldpodcast to get this exclusive listener offer, or just subscribe for the year. Just get all those magazines arriving. Why have 3 when you can have 12? I mean, come on, it's just maths, guys. Listen to the Runner's World podcast on iTunes, Spotify, all of your favourite podcast apps. Just search Runner's World UK if you haven't done that already, and subscribe. That's the main thing. Subscribe, because then you don't have to listen to this end bit every time and just remind yourself to subscribe. You should just subscribe and then it works.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.